Sorry, the only other time I've done public speaking was in court, so.
He did it well, though, because he's still here. Yeah, so.
Be kind, yeah. Be really nice.
All right, I just want to say, this is the most PC gamers I've seen in one room since, like, lunchtime, when we were in the TF2 tournament.
Yeah, give yourselves a hand.
Have you guys seen that PC free play area? It's intense. Have you seen the console free play area? Not so great.
It's a ghost town.
But you can do cartwheels there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
A lot of space.
Yeah, but dude, they don't have Kinect in the PC.
Terrific. All right, so. who are we? We're PC Gamer. That's 45 of our issues up there. And I guess let's go down the line. I'll introduce us. That's Chris Comiskey, my far right. Our
hey
copy editor and contributor.
Good to be here. Thanks, yeah.
One step closer to me is Logan Decker, editor-in-chief of PC Gamer.
Yeah.
One of the world's foremost squirrel enthusiasts, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's go security.
Always and forever. I'm Evan Lottie, senior editor for PC Gamer, and to my left, rarely seen outside of our podcast, Andy Bauman, podcast producer.
Yeah.
Yes. This guy's done 150 or something podcast episodes for us.
Oh, for you guys? I don't even know. I've lost count. Over 100.
Quite a few. Yeah.
You're a machine, Andy.
Absolutely. A big deal. All right. So before we push into our presentation and Q&A, it's funny. We just kind of found out yesterday that this is going to be an hour instead of a half an hour. But that's great. More time with you guys. That's awesome.
Second half is clothing optional, so.
Yeah.
I did not sign up for that.
We'll let you know when that time passes. So I wanted to start off. I'm still ready to give away some of these issues we have up here. I want to know if there's somebody in the audience that's been with us a very long time and knows what was on the cover of the first issue of PC Gamer in the United States. Right there. You're the man, Keenan. Well done. Please come and collect your Build Your Own Gaming PC issue, special issue. This is our hardware guide that we put only on store shelves. Well done. BioForge, did anybody play? I don't even remember what that game's about. Is it a shooter, Keenan?
That was stunning.
Why did we put it on our cover? Wow.
Had bio in the title.
All right, so we're sincerely glad you guys are here. This is our first PAX panel, and I mean, just we're so pleased to have a chance to talk to you guys about PC gaming. It's an incredible hobby. It's the most diverse hobby within gaming. And it's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to adjust this here, sorry. The value and strength of PC game is its communities. It's made up of many, many, many communities. Arguably some of the most hardcore gaming communities in the world. And that's not necessarily, the defining feature of the PC, just like mouse and keyboards and the defining feature of the PC. So we just wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about some of the coolest stuff happening on PC today, first of all, and just have that sort of an introduction to answering some of your questions about the platform, about what you're playing, about whatever you like. And Andy Bauman, it's funny, you're used to, you're an excellent podcast producer, but also pretty handy with the video, as it turns out.
Oh, that's how I got my training. So I cut my chops doing video, but I will say, I just wanted to come talk about how much cooler it was to play on PC than in consoles, but Evan was like, no, we already know that. We don't need to do that. So I was like, well, then I guess we need to make like a thesis statement for this panel.
Yes.
Because to get everybody like on the same page of what we're going to talk about.
A sizzle reel, if you will.
No. I don't like that term.
Defy that statement? Yeah. Well, let's just put it up there just to get you guys' juices flowing or whatever, get your emotions aligned for what we're going to talk about. Andy, whip this up for us.
Hold this off. He's got some marauders on the ground below.
Evan had to edit my copy.
No need for snobbery. The goal today is to champion and introduce to you new things happening right now on the PC. You may have heard of these things, but there is so much more to them than you might expect. We want you to live them.
Twins sprinting to your position.
Get in the communities.
Take off.
Come on. Lift. Jupiter 1 is take off.
Try out the mods. Be fans of the best competitive gamers.
Look, this is the first time this setup has actually lost a single ship.
Back, BioWare needs to desperately seize up, and this refinery could go down as well. That would be absolutely huge if he loses another refinery.
build the ultimate cockpit. Simulate real-world experiences. Form your own playgrounds. Feel the freedom to play how you want. These games have no console counterpart.
Where are you running, Jackson? Why are you ejecting?
Discover that is PC gaming.
Some Archons getting caught out of position.
Obviously, destroyers are built.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah. Well done, Andy.
Ladies and gentlemen, does that Laser Death Cat ever get old?
No.
No, it does not.
Oh my goodness. You're not gonna find that in Xbox, but I'm not here to reinforce that thought. I mean, like the video says, you know, there is that connotation among PC gamers, you know, PC gaming elitists. That's a term we hear here and there. We're not here to forward that concept and that idea and that construct. We're here to talk, you know, just on our own terms about some of the awesome stuff that's happening on the PC today. And that begins with Minecraft. So Minecraft, if you haven't heard of it, it's an indie game that's been around, pretty much sprung up earlier this year, and still technically an alpha. And, you know, one of the coolest things about our jobs, unlike somebody, you know, we work at a company that has console magazines and GamesRadar.com, if you know those guys. One of the coolest things about my job is we get to discover things that people don't know about. We get to tell people about these amazing experiences that are lesser known or aren't documented, have zero marketing dollars, have no advertising budgets, they're never going to be on TV. And that's one of the cool things about PC gaming, I think, first and foremost, that feeling of personal discovery. You know, maybe it's Minecraft for somebody, maybe it's EVE Online, building your own corporation within EVE Online for somebody else. But just the idea that there's a frontier, first of all, within PC gaming, that there are new things out there and you can find them by finding these communities. So again, about Minecraft, if you're not familiar with it, it's a basically a collaborative building game. You can think about it as, you know, playing a cooperative Legos with your friends, basically. You're building these cities, and as you can see there, that's just one server, one dedicated server that a group of people built up together. And actually, the guy yesterday, the developer of the game, just announced that he's sold 100,000 copies. It's still in alpha. It's not even released. And he has half a million registered users. It's free to play. Minecraft.net. Please check it out. Okay, so following up on the PC's living communities, sort of reinforcing this idea of what we're talking about, how the communities are living. I remember earlier this year, maybe you guys remember this as well, Microsoft phased out multiplayer support for Xbox One games. So we're talking about Halo 1, Halo 2, any game that anybody played multiplayer on the original Xbox, they can't play it online anymore. It's gone forever. Like, you can't play Halo 2 game online anymore. Isn't that kind of insane? One of their most successful and popular games. They want people to graduate to the next system. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the next slide, but I mean, StarCraft, for example, we've already seen that sell 3 million copies in 1 month. So, you know, we have flagship games just like anybody else. There's independent games, there's small games, there's mods. There's little experiences and there's massive flagship experiences. But within that, there are subcultures within StarCraft, and that's one of the most interesting things, I think. I mean, the internet is the base infrastructure for everything we do, and everything interesting that comes out of PC gaming, where we have somebody, you heard him in Andy's sizzle reel. Sorry, Andy.
No.
HD StarCraft, I don't know his real name, actually. But
he was on the show.
He was on our podcast. I don't know. I forget. His name's Alex, I think. So one of you know, probably the foremost StarCraft commentator in North America, his YouTube channel, it's only been up since May 2009, so about a year, 59 million views, 200,000 subscribers. And it's just one of the most, you know, nuanced and rewarding things to, you know, you can play StarCraft in all these different ways. You can approach it analytically. You can enjoy StarCraft simply as a spectator. You know, it's fantastic. And the infrastructure we have through the internet, through communities, through organizing tournaments, is really a big part of that. And that's something we're grateful for. So next slide, you know, remember me talking about Microsoft's Chex Quest. Come on.
Hey.
So this was a Dune mod back in 96. Some of you may remember pulling this out of a box of Chex cereal or pulling on your mom's leg or something and say, I really want Chex all of a sudden, but you don't like Chex. But there's a game. And you know, I remember playing this with my cousin at my grandma's house. Like, I don't know if you... Raise your hands if any of you guys, any of the rest of you do this. Like keyboard co-op. So in other words, like one person moves, the other person shoots. Like tapping that control key. Yeah, thank you. Mech Warrior, absolutely. Torso rotation. You got to do that. Yeah. It's necessary.
You got to have a wingman.
So, you know, I'm just thinking about this for a sec. And the openness of the PC platform means that, you know, unlike Xbox, where the multiplayer support has been phased out for original Xbox games, games that people are fanatical about and love and have every right to love, they're excellent games. Chexquest.org, if you want to check it out, still has an active community, still has people making fan art for this game on DeviantArt. Some of it is pretty weird, understandably. The guy wears checkered wheat armor.
Wait, made out of real wheat?
Wait. Yeah, it's a Chex
armor. You can
armor.
Eat his... His armor.
Is there some rule 34?
Wow. I'm not going to comment on that. So it's just continually amazing to me that PC gamers are so passionate about, you know, the games they're passionate about. They find niche communities and they invest so much of themselves into them that, you know, we have sequels of this game being released 12 years later. This free game that released in a box of cereal is still supported and cherished and loved and played, and people release new WAD files for it for new maps and things like that. It's really a testament to what's possible just out of the fact that the PC is very open.
To be fair, there are new kinds of Chex too, so it's really delicious.
Like Count Chocula Quest or something. That'd be cool.
Outstanding. So kind of.
Sorry.
Wow. So kind of along the lines of what I was just talking about with StarCraft, I'm not a flight sim player. I don't, you know, set up a joystick in my house. A lot of you probably don't. But I like knowing that it exists. Is that kind of weird to say? I don't know. I mean, I love Andy Mahood, our sim columnist, for years. I love reading his stuff, just knowing that people are enjoying themselves in this hardcore way. So the bullet point I have there, a weekend for the hardcore, flying in real time from Los Angeles to New York. So there are communities out there of flight sim hobbyists that A, build replica cockpits in their garage, you know, spend thousands of their own dollars to erect, you know, that's one up there. That's not a real cockpit. That's, you know, independent monitors hooked up together there. And they, you know, they find these specialty dealers that exist online and assemble it on their own. And not only that, I mean, not only will they fly in real time, they'll have their friends that are within the same community sort of do air traffic control with them over the radio. That is so freaking cool. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I can't imagine what it's like to be that guy's wife, but it's fantastic. I just love knowing it exists. I love knowing that it's available. If I'm interested, if I want to check it out, it's fantastic. And that's modding for you.
That is like more realistic than the flight simulators we used in the Air Force. That's pretty impressive how he set that up.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So, you don't ever want to press that, ever.
I used to do flight sims, but before high school, I was way into flight simulator, and we would do like Paris, New York to Paris. We would always speed it up to 8x, and then forget to turn it down when we tried to land. And that's like such a waste of 4 hours. But it was still like one of the coolest things ever. And then just trying to learn like the ILS systems in airplanes. So you know that when someone's like, is anyone on this plane can fly? You're like, well, yeah. Like you will totally want to be that guy. And in Snakes on a Plane when he did it, and he's like, oh, I did it on PlayStation. I was like, oh, that would never happen. You would never learn how to fly a plane.
No, actually, yeah.
Good stuff. All right, so... kind of along the lines of what I was talking about with Chex Quest, even the continued support for games. So, I mean, everybody here, even if you haven't played GoldenEye somehow on Nintendo 64, you know it's excellent. You know, one of the best couch co-op same screen games, you know, released ever. And you know, we're just now hearing that Activision is going to be publishing a a legitimate sequel for GoldenEye. It's coming out in I think it's this holiday. I don't know. So anyway.
That's the best thing. Only on Wii?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
Maybe I'm wrong. Wow. So the interesting thing about this, so, you know.
Seems like an anticlimactic ending to the whole saga.
A little bit. So I mean, everybody that grew up in the 90s played this game. They love this game. It's a fantastic multiplayer experience. But because, okay, so Rare, the guys made Banjo-Kazooie, made GoldenEye, Microsoft bought them. And so the rights to who owned GoldenEye were sort of not very clear. And you know, Nintendo wanted to get the game made. Microsoft wanted to get the rights from Nintendo and so on and so forth. So it was in this limbo for a decade plus. And meanwhile, the fans just kind of sit there like, where's GoldenEye? Like, we will buy this game. Millions of people will buy this game. Why is it not there? And the modding community, what did they do? Well, fuck that. We're going to make it ourselves. Come on. And has anybody out there played GoldenEye Source? Yeah. It is one of the most faithful mods I've ever played. So it's not simply a reskin Counter-Strike. It captures the slow pace that you have from a Nintendo controller. Like, it's really amazing. There's no jump. Even the aiming reticule is preserved. It's so faithful. And just you know, thanks to the tools we have and the dedication and the passion we have on PC to make that happen. So, I mean, there's tons of other remakes out there for existing games, console games even. And GoldenEye Source is probably, I mean, really one of the hottest ones right now, I'd say. Check that out.
Does the club still suck as a gun?
It's terrible. You can be Odd Job, though, and just kind of cheat and, you know, be ankle high on everybody. GoldenEyeSource.net. Okay, get the groan out.
It's a PC game.
Get the groan out. It's fine. Let it happen.
Dude,
okay.
All my relatives have this stuff updating on their Facebook. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Touche.
Dude, I had to.
So Farmville, the automatic response of most PC gamers when they hear about Farmville or when they see Farmville is, ugh, or gah, or what are you doing? Why are you playing this? Like, it's so easy to condescend to this game. But, I mean, for me, first of all, just the fact that we have this entire spectrum of what's available. You saw, you know, some of the ridiculous flight sim communities and what they're up to. But we have this entire spectrum from end to end of what's available to people. And that just makes us an amazingly big family. And that's really exciting me to begin with. So, but beyond that, I like to sort of connect this to Pokemon to some extent. I think a lot of us played Pokemon growing up on Game Boy. And I think we sort of undervalue how much Pokemon taught us about hardcore RPG. You didn't play Pokemon, Logan?
No, dude.
Oh, you saw that?
Wow. I have so, really good peripheral vision.
Of course
vision.
I did.
I was watching like Voltron when I was growing up, man. We didn't have Pokemon. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I had like Battletoads in the Game Boy.
That's good. Yeah. So
yeah.
I heard somebody use Voltron as a verb the other day. I thought that was really hot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Seriously.
Fantastic.
That needs context. We're just like, I'm going to Voltron you to death, Logan. Like, what?
Long story. It's like, wow. X and Y are going to Voltron together tomorrow. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's move on.
I was more of a Power Rangers guy. Can we go back, Andy? Sorry.
Oh.
I wasn't done with that.
Come on. Sorry.
So
Evan has found food.
Okay. So,
hi, Evan.
I'm going to send you a very like terse message about feeding my cows when I get home, Andy.
You're going to shoot all his pets.
So getting back to Pokemon, very interesting phenomenon. Millions of people played it. And I think we undervalue the way that Pokemon trained people to obsess about these amazing, like pretty hardcore mechanics, right? I mean, they're in the context of this game where you're fighting with animals. But hey, animals, you know, 62 million monthly active users. That means people are actively playing it, not even subscribed. That's the equivalent of the entire United Kingdom as of this year. So what we're talking about is a generation of PC gamers that we're going to see in the, you know, in the coming decade, decade and a half, half decade, that are going to want to graduate to hardcore games because they grew up on this stuff. They're learning mechanics, collection. You know, we can argue about whether they're good or healthy or cool mechanics all we want. But the point is we have these millions of new people playing games on the PC. PC gaming is not dying.
Is there any griefing in Farmville?
You know,
I've never played it.
I've honestly, one of our editors, Josh Augustine, who does MMO coverage, and he covers a lot of free-to-play stuff for us.
He's so nice. He would never grieve.
He's a very nice
gentleman. If there'd be 62 million and one players.
that's what I was going to say. Like, I was saying, like, Josh, can we make an article where we go into Farmville and, like, mess people's farms up? That would be an awesome feature. We could tell people how to do that. But apparently,
kill them and wear their skins.
Like, poison their livestock.
Hey, hey,
nice. Okay. Moving on. So, you guys probably use Steam. Steam's pretty cool.
Is this but, the Mac Steam? What is this on the other side?
Oh, that's...
That's Good Old Games.
That's GOG.com. Yeah. You know, it does sort of resemble a Mac interface. So, how
I'm
many...
I'm a noob.
So, you know, this isn't the brunt of my point. I don't want to compare everything we do to consoles. It's not the brunt of our point. But you're playing on Xbox, you're playing on PlayStation, you have access to one digital store. Everything goes to that store. One group of people controls the prices. We have access to...
And
Steam.
Raises the prices.
And raises the prices, sure. We have access to Steam, Impulse, Direct2Drive, GOG.com, Gamersgate, any others that I'm missing out there?
Greenhouse.
I'm sorry?
Greenhouse.
Greenhouse, yeah, from Penny Arcade, of course.
And what about OnLive? Is that even...
OnLive definitely counts, yes. Yeah. That's a new streaming service that came out. You guys may have heard of it. So the cool thing about this is we benefit from that competition. You know, if you guys were buying PC games around, let's see, beginning of summer, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you probably were benefiting from these insane sales where Left 4 Dead 2 was like, I don't know, $10.20. And, you know, like all of THQ's games that are available on Steam for, I don't know, $75, like 20 plus games. Steam right now has 639 games for $10 or less. So that's something we benefit from just from the fact that, publishers and developers are interested in volume. They don't have to worry about shipping the game on shelves, of course, on Steam. They're just trying to sell as many copies as possible. And you know, by activating those sales, they just make more money, so everybody wins.
Plus, in the case of GOG.com, you know, it's just amazing to me that I can buy these games for a fifth of the price that when I originally bought them, and they work better.
Plus a DRM.
Yeah, it just launches, it installs, it's effortless, it's beautiful.
Those sales are dangerous, though, if you're like me. You buy like 30 of those games, and you're just totally overwhelmed, you know, and you're like, oh, crap. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. But they're great sales. Yeah.
And so they make a business out of reviving our own culture, you know? It's amazing.
Have you guys ever used anything on Gamersgate? It's pretty good. I heard of it because I was I don't know if anybody remembers. I was trying to play Pathologic and that saga, and that's the only way I could get it. So it's like it was really cool to get a game that had been so obscure.
Downer.
Where was that made? Like Yugoslavia?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Those downer countries.
But I was kind of scared. I was kind of scared to install Gamersgate because I had no idea what it was. But it's actually a really cool service.
Controls V.
Yeah, it's terrific. I mean, I love the fact that I can buy Fallout or Duke Nukem 3D. Hey, Duke Nukem, by the way, what the hell? And I can get the original manual in PDF. I can get the original soundtrack. I can get cool avatars like... for free. That's stuff that is always monetized. I'm sorry to bring up consoles again, but it's always monetized. Little banners you put next to your picture, your little avatars and things like that. Little lightsabers that you show off to your friends on Xbox Live. I love that I get all that stuff for free. So Arma, is there anybody out there that plays on our Arma server? Gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
Andy does too. That's terrific. So,
and if you're not, why not?
Because I don't want to use like 600 buttons on the keyboard.
Dude.
No. Okay, so Arma.
No, that's saying. See. This is one thing I wanted to talk about is Arma. Arma is like not that hard. It's a really fun experience, and it's what we're talking about. It's jumping into these communities of people, making your own fun, basically, and having an incredible time. And it's like. You want to play a first-person shooter because that's what you like. Like, I like guns for some reason. I have, like, this unhealthy obsession with guns, right? But I also don't want to play Call of Duty all the time.
Yeah.
So this is, like, an amazing alternative because it's, like, a simulation, and then we just mess around most of the time, but these, like, moments come up that you're just – they're just, like, these one percentile moments that are incredible experiences. And you don't have to be good. You can just jump in. And everybody should just take the chance because it's worth it.
And I make fun of how many buttons the game uses, but I do that in jest because that's a great thing. I hate it when you're playing like a console game such as Borderlands, et cetera, and you got to hold down a button, you know, like a key, like D or whatever. It's like, why can't I just assign this to like one of the 50 other buttons I have? And this is a game that fully takes advantage of that. So, you know, I give it a hard time. But
yeah, I mean, part of my mission, I put like 300 hours in this game since June last year.
That's pretty intense.
Ridiculous. But it's, I mean, this is part of the broader topic of emergence and agency in games, which is really, really kind of a thing we own on PC. I think I'd like to think that we own, but more specific than that, it's kind of my goal to deconstruct as much as I can what's, you know, how intimidating the word simulation is to people, because they hear simulation, they're like, well, I'm going to have to, you know, learn these obscure keyboards, shortcuts, and I'm going to have to like worry about, you know, I mean, admittedly, Arma is a game that that distinguishes between bullets that are 5.56 millimeter and 7.62 millimeter. In terms of how far they go, what damage they do, et cetera. But as you saw in the intro video, we mostly turn that into situations where we're jumping out of helicopters and...
Yeah, but we were trying to save you.
I appreciate that.
There, you put was that in the last PC Gamer where it was like the mounted machine gun on the mule that you could actually
yeah,
mod in?
Yeah, that's something you can mod. But like I was saying, I mean, we mostly spend our time in this game in co-op. Hey, it's 64-player co-op, by the way. Jumping out of helicopters, seeing if we can accurately shoot mortars at like cows and stuff like that. But you know, so it's that you know, when I'm talking about agency, it's playing the game how you want. It's ownership over your experiences. You're authoring your own experiences. The developer isn't writing them for you. Arma is a game in which you're dropped into this map. Depending, you know, there's the recent expansion, Operation Arrowhead. It's actually sort of modeled after Afghanistan. The original, it's a 225 square kilometer map. You usually have an objective. You have something you need to do, blow up a tank, et cetera. And it's just up to you. How do you want to do that? How do you want to accomplish that? Where you want to do? What do you want to bring to battle? And, I mean, that's just that ownership over your own experiences. They become yours, right? You sort of refer to them as water cooler moments, maybe. But, you know, that's a rare thing on PC. And there's a lot of games out there with that same...
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, plus you can say like really cheesy radio stuff like to us on Vent, and everybody's like way into it, no matter what, how retarded it sounds to your like girlfriend sitting next to you. Sorry, I didn't mean to use the R word.
I think the dorkiest thing that's happened to me through Arma is learning the phonetic alphabet, like Alpha, Bravo, Charlie,
Alpha,
Delta,
Bravo,
Echo,
Charlie, yeah.
Yeah. And so on. It's ridiculous. So contrast to that, you know, again, talking about the spectrum of communities that we have access to, we can play this game how we want. We can be ridiculous. We can jump out of helicopters or make it into a game of cops and robbers, which we do. But there are groups of people out there, tacticalgamer.com being one of them. There's also a group called Shack Tactical so they custom design their own missions, first of all. So they have people that basically handcraft these missions for them to play. And they have an authentic command structure. So they have a legitimate commander and snipers and mortar teams and artillery teams. And then they take time on a Sunday or a Saturday. And, you know, they'll be queued up and, you know, the week prior they'll be exchanging all their forums and email about their battle plan, you know, who's in what squads, who's going to go in where, what their backup plan is. And they go at it for hours. Like, and there's a commander and it blows my mind that we have access to this kind of incredibly authentic experience in terms of military gameplay. And it's intimidating to some extent, but it's amazing to behold. Just check on their website, search for them on YouTube. You can see what these guys are up to, and it's just an amazing thing happening on gaming that's little known because it's not being marketed, it's not being, you know, put out there by anybody else, any publisher.
Evan, you were an embedded reporter in one of those matches, weren't you? One of those like hardcore.
I did check in with these guys last year. It was for our October issue, I think. And
yeah, but were you like, no, I know how to shoot guns and stuff.
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's just such an interesting, you know, again, the openness in the environment allowed me to sort of join in and really act as an embedded reporter in this game and just observe that battle. It was pretty remarkable.
Who said they were scared? Because I am too. And, I don't. Yeah, exactly. I, you know, it's just like, well, I'm the guy who makes sandwiches. If I was going to play in that,
yeah.
But I actually just watched the clips because it's like watching a war movie. You see things happen spontaneously, and you see how people respond. You know how they coalesce around a solution. It's just amazing. I'm just too complex for me. Yeah. You know, I'm a little older, so you have to forgive me. But I love to just watch it. It's like watching a different war movie every night. Except you're not going to get hurt, and you don't have to make sandwiches.
Certainly. And I mean, I don't want to focus on armor too much. Let's move it on. But there are, you know, Warcraft, of course, is a completely comparable to that, where you have guilds that are focused on raiding, or you have people that run the stock market, essentially the game, and try and game that. They own the experience. They make it into their own and do what they want to do. Eve is another excellent example where we have these amazing, hilarious instances of people infiltrating a rival corporation within the space game and spending months, you know, building up their reputation within this organization. Legitimate spy tactics happen on the PC. They don't happen anywhere else. So sleep...
sleep besides the real world.
Oh, sure, yeah. Okay.
So speaking of sleep is death.
Sleep is death.
Is this not the most PC of games ever?
Kind of, yeah.
No, it totally is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys played it? No, okay. Yeah.
So it's kind of like D&D to a certain degree.
It is. So, yeah. it's two players, and it's collaborative in the sense that, you know, basically you can sort of imagine that one player is controlling, like, they can be controlling those two guys in suits, and the other player can be controlling the gentleman at the bottom there that's screaming, "Oh God." And it's really like collaborative storytelling. So I put point and click there in the sense that there's sort of mechanics that are similar to point and click. You can pick things up. You can, you know, type pick up or set on fire or drop or take or things like that. And it's completely open-ended. So there's these assets in there. You're not drawing the game. You can put your own assets in, of course. There's characters and rooms and fields and items, and you're just writing the story as you go along. I sort of dream of a situation where I have a family, and like instead of sitting down to read a bedtime story, we can play this game. Maybe that's kind of a little too indulgent, but I just love the idea of completely open-ended experiences happening on PC, having ownership over your stories, literally making your stories as you go along. And I really encourage you guys to check it out. It's just a fun exercise in improvisation. And sleepisdeath.com.
When it works, it's an exhilaration like you just never feel with almost anything else, you know, because you have this, it's like playing, it's like improvising jazz music with a friend.
Yeah. I mean, Evan, you talk about that, right? You're like, you know, the story is great in a game, but it's like the stories are better, whatever stories you take away from it for a gameplay perspective, like how you killed the boomer and Left 4 Dead or whatever. And this is literally that personified, right? I mean, that's taking that concept of making those water cooler moments and making it just one after the other. You know, it's pretty intimate. It's pretty cool.
Certainly. I mean, you know, it's on a completely different level, but it's worth bringing up. I mean, Mass Effect, it's a game that that's focused on choice, of course. We, you know, we love Mass Effect. We love the fact that we can feel heroic through our experiences or like a renegade. But to some extent, like, we're all sort of experiencing the same or a very similar Commander Shepard. And I just love the idea that, you know, either me or with my co-op partner, those experiences were ours. No one else has ownership over them. And I can sort of carry them around with me. So here's just a list of recommended websites that we've been talking about through this presentation.
Well, the bottom one is for Love, if anyone's confused.
Yeah, bottom one is for Love. Another sort of, I guess it's comparable to Minecraft. It's an MMO, and you can sort of collaborate with people, build stuff, build infrastructure like power lines and things like that. And I don't know, just some loose ends and stuff I want to bring up. I mean, we've sort of been highlighting some more obscure stuff, because we want to bring to your attention. I mean, we can talk about Team Fortress 2 all day and why it's significant and why it's cool. You guys know about that, I'd like to think. But it's worth saying along the same lines of what we're talking about in terms of developer and player collaboration, and that being like an ongoing process. What Valve has done with Team Fortress 2, I mean, just in terms of rolling out updates, listening to the community, and, you know, again, talking about sales, all that free value of basically three years worth of game is amazing. It stems from our infrastructure, our ability to communicate, the ease, the proximity to keyboards that we have to some extent. But it's a fantastic precedent, and we all hope it continues, of course. So I'm done talking. Thank goodness.
But we got to mention TF2, right?
We just did.
Oh, did we? Oh, sorry. Shit.
Where did you go, dude?
Wow.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. You zoned out. So thanks for listening, guys. I hope it was useful. Again, like, we cover this stuff every month. We cover it on our website. We cover it on our podcast. It is such a joy to stumble into something cool like Minecraft, like we have recently, and be able to tell you guys about it. And that's, I mean, I know it hurts my heart a little bit when I talk to a PC gamer and they sort of, you know, they're very concerned with just multi-platform games, just like, well, why isn't Call of Duty have dedicated servers, or why doesn't, is Crysis 2 going to be as good on the PC? And it's like, those are excellent games. Yeah. No, totally. But I think like, and I'd never turn people away from those games because they're fantastic, but these amazing, small, like personal, intimate experiences that you can find on the PC, don't forget about them. Yeah. Seek them out through us. We're going to be shoveling you guys with information in the coming years, and we just really encourage you to seek them out and better yourself as a gamer through them, hopefully.
I always like to think that those multi-platform experiences that are like super well designed and tight, you know what your level is going to be. Think of it as like a sound level meter. You know it's going to be a uniform level, so it can be fun. But these games, there's more of a dynamic range. There's quiets, and then there's super louds.
Well played.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not always, you know, you don't know what you're going to get into. It might be boring a lot of the time, but then there's that 1% of the time where it's just and better than anything you'll ever experience anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic just because, I mean, we already have access to those experiences, Crysis and Left 4 Dead. Like, everybody, you know, all platforms have access to them. But I guess I challenge you guys to think about, you know, are you concerned with Crysis or the big multi-platform games because they're at the forefront of your imagination or your understanding and because you're being marketed to about them and you hear about them and they're here at PAX and they're, you know, they have big booths and things like that. And are you missing out on these really interesting personal experiences?
I just want to add something really quick that, you know, there is a reason we call ourselves PC gamers, you know, and there's always this tension like, you know, it's PC versus console, but we do call ourselves PC gamers because I think we are different. We are definitely different people. We're different kind of gamers. And the way I see it is that, you know, consoles are an entertainment platform. They're a very efficient and effective entertainment platform, but PCs are a creativity platform. They're like a medium, like music or crayons, you know, they're part of how we express ourselves. And that's not to say you can't be creative on a console. Of course you can, you know, it's just a little weird. It's trying to like eat spaghetti with a spoon. It's like, you know, you're using the wrong tool, you know. So that's why when you go to a big, you know, commercial event like E3, it's very big business. You know, entertainment is a huge, huge business. And wherever you see big business, it's console, console, console. The more commercial the event, the more consoles you'll see. But a fan-oriented event like PAX brings out the PC gamers. If you want to see what I mean, just go up to the console free play area. you know, it just does. It attracts the kind of people that we are, which is, because this is, PC gaming is how we express ourselves. You know, it's how we play all these different kind of games and how we get together in Arma 2, you know, and spend hours upon hours in these amazing simulations, you know, forming bonds and creating solutions to problems, you know, that exist in a virtual space, which is amazing. And, you know, and the same thing is happening in Farmville. The same thing is happening, you know, in any medium, in Sleep is Death, you know. These are incredibly creative expressions. And I do believe that we are very unique people. And in as much as this panel is about the creative frontiers in PC gaming, it's not about developers. It's pretty much about you guys, you know, because we're the players. So thanks for being awesome.
Yay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you, Logan.
I've got a question.
I guess I'll go. Swearing.
Are we going to do questions now?
Yeah, that's cool.
I'll kick it off.
You have one?
Andy? Yeah. Well, since I'm not like in the office.
You have to go up to the mic, though.
Oh. Oh,
really?
No.
Come on. He has a mic.
Oh, I was totally going to. Do you guys ever have like awkward moments with the other mags? And properties like Games Radar, where they're talking about something like console related, and it's like the awkward like hallway moment. Tell me.
And like when. Yeah,
no, just like they'll be like, "Oh, did you play Little Big Planet? It's like the greatest game ever." And you're like, "Actually," you get like so nerdy. Do you ever have like those nerdy? And then they just kind of look at you and you walk away.
No, there's no big rivalry or anything like that. I mean, it's awesome what they do and awesome what they cover. It's fine.
Pretend.
No, sorry.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, you know, I look at it stuff like. I don't have a PS3, so I didn't get to play Heavy Rain, you know, and I would love to. It looks
actually,
like
it's pretty cool.
You know, amazing game. I played Indigo Prophecy like 3 times, I think, you know, so I can't wait to play it. But I just don't have the time. There's so much to do on the PC, and I wish I could, but it's just not worth me for me to, you know, to buy it for one game, because, you know, you play the game. You don't, afterwards, you don't get together with a friend and create a new story and do all that stuff that I love doing, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I love all that stuff. I love games in general. It's just, you know, so we tell them, oh, that's cute.
I mean, as far as like, I mean, back when GFW, God rest their soul, and they're still around, CGW, I mean, you were telling us once, you're like, you know, it wasn't an adversarial relationship. It was more like a competition of like, oh, like who could do better? And you kind of feed ideas off each
Absolutely.
Other. Yeah. It wasn't in any way like, you know, screw those guys or whatever. It was, you know, it was respect across both sides.
Oh, it was a great magazine. They're great people. They still are, you know.
So
terrific. All right. So we have a good 20 minutes for questions. I'm happy about that. And I want to hear what you guys' concerns are and questions are. Why don't you introduce yourself and let us know what you have to think.
Okay, my name's Peter Severud. I have two things mod-related. One website I think you should have mentioned up on that list. Mm-hmm. It's called falloutnexus.com. It's like the epicenter for the whole modding community for Fallout 3.
Great.
It's just a huge database of a whole bunch of mods, like better textures for the whole game, better sky, or just skins and stuff.
Letters.
Yeah, that's like something we didn't even talk
com.
About. It was like, like player enhancement or community enhancement of games that are already available, especially new ones.
Well, I know that
Dragon Age.
I mean, yeah, Dragon Age. There's a mod in Dragon Age where I can change the teeth of my characters if I don't like their teeth. So there's that. Yeah, it's terrific.
Also, have you heard of Black Mesa Source?
Of course.
Yeah.
Storied.
Yeah.
It's stellar.
Yeah, I believe that recently they got to be interviewed by Atomic Gamer. I believe that hopefully it's going to get done this year, or maybe. Yeah, I know.
That is often the case with mods. I mean, if it's a group of people that are collaborating over a long distance and they have their own jobs or working on their free time, like. Especially if they like a remake like that, that's very ambitious and requires a lot of detailed work. You know, it comes out when it comes out, but we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure this one are actually getting pretty close. But with the history of that one, it's probably going to be next year, year after.
Well, we've got plenty of stuff to look forward to in the meanwhile, I'm sure.
What about System Shock Rebirth? When is that coming out?
You can get a lot of System Shock 2 updates.
We can.
Yeah.
We can only hope it doesn't fall in the footsteps of Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah. What? You guys know anything about that?
Oh, yeah. We played Duke Nukem today. It was kind of weird.
Oh, wow.
Uh-oh. He's scratching his chin. This is giving me a hard one.
No. You do it.
Hi, Chad.
You would win in a fight now.
Well, that's Chad. What's up, Chad?
Hey. Hi. Hey, guys. Hey, Andy. Captain Spaulding. I am curious what your games of shame are that you have not played, that you missed and never got around to. So go down the line, the one that you forgot to play and know you really should have. And I'll go first just to take some heat off. I never got to XCOM. So
yeah, that's a good one.
I've never
too.
Got there either.
Wow.
And Chris, also, an amendment at the end. If you have any Machinima stuff that you know of out there that is going on that's cool, I'm curious about that too.
Yeah. I know one that never got finished.
I know one too.
Oh.
So that I started.
Yeah, yeah, I'll attack that first though. One YouTube channel I'd recommend is, doesn't have anything I can spell out, but youtube.com/DJY1991. One of the most hilarious guys out there did the Freeman's Mind, which is excellent by itself, but just does some insane, hilarious stuff in Gary's Mind. The 100 Ways to Die in Gary's Mind. You guys have probably seen that. Subscribe to him. But yeah, Games of Shame. Chris, why don't you go first?
Oh, man. So I have a rather grievous sin to admit. One of them are rectified. I hadn't played Deus Ex until like 2 months ago. Yeah, I know. So
I thought you played.
Sorry.
Get out. So,
right.
I was busy. I don't know. The other one, this is even worse. You're really going to kick my ass now. But, Half-Life. I have not played through and beaten the original.
Seriously, get
Oxygen
out.
Level just dropped. What?
I'm sorry I asked.
I played
this.
Half-Life 2 like 3 times, so that counts as one Half-Life, right?
Can we
security?
Get a
security?
We're going to need some
I played a few hours of it.
We're going to need an escort for you to get out of this building alive. Does anybody, one of you guys probably has it on a netbook right now. You can just start playing it. All right, so Logan.
Okay, Evan, what about
Let me log into Steam really fast.
Oh, myself?
No, so, I actually, I never finished Deus Ex.
Oh, what? You just gave me all that crap. Wow.
I started it like four times, I swear to God.
Four times?
But I just never got, I never finished.
How far did you get?
Yeah, where did you end
like
up?
Like about, you know, like halfway.
Look, like you're sinking maybe lower and lower. As I bet you're just going to.
All right, I'm going to try and.
I just kept dying. No matter what I did, you know.
What's the name of JC's brother?
That's what quick save is for. That's what quick save is for. For myself, I've never played WoW.
I think you did
good. I mean, that's probably the case for some people, but I'm kind of ashamed. I feel like I should. Thank you. Yeah.
Whoa.
That's a good one.
My name is Evan Lobby, and I've never played. No. Yeah, I feel like I should, just to have some kind of understanding for it, because it relates to everything. There's so many games that are derivative of it, and I need to have an understanding of that game to count as any kind of worthwhile journalist, I think. So, Andy.
I never played Diablo.
What?
I haven't played it either.
Girl.
All right, well, you're welcome, guys.
Thanks a lot, Chad.
You have earned us enormous shame. Yes, please.
I actually have two questions. The first one is, I didn't catch the beginning of your talk, but you guys talk about Dwarf Fortress at all?
Yeah,
Dwarf Fortress?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In some ways, it's a two-dimensional Minecraft, you could say.
I love that game.
Yeah.
The other one is, with all this talk about PC gaming, is that...
No.
Obviously not. But can that argument still be made by some people after the release of the sale figures for StarCraft 2?
I don't think so. I mean, some relevant statistics. Steam has 25 million as of January registered users, active users.
Wait, are they disappointed in the numbers?
They're not disappointed, but for a game that's basically one third of a full game released PC only to sell 3 million copies in a month.
Do you really think it's one third of a full game?
I don't think so, but that's the argument people make.
Yeah. Oh. I thought those are good figures, but I guess they were saying, well, I read somewhere, and it's probably just the same stuff you read all over, but it's like they expect to make half a billion on StarCraft 2, which is like ludicrous. That might be true. Good point.
Even still,
if each game costs like 100 million to make, which I guess that can't be true because it's not as expensive to make the next two, but.
I gotta say though, my kind of metric, and my publishers hate me for this, but I consider the success of a game to be its level of engagement with its audience.
That's well said.
And man, you just can't. I mean, look at South Korea.
Yeah.
You know, that's a successful game, regardless of if it sold 6 million or six. You know, that's when you grab people that firmly, you know, and give them that much pleasure and excitement and thrills. Yeah. That's a really successful game.
Well, I mean, it's a phenomenon
almost,
out there.
Almost
for
there.
And I really wonder, like, what rhetoric we're buying into sometimes. Like, I read message boards like anybody else, and half of it is like, well, this PlayStation 3 exclusive sold this much more than the Xbox exclusive, or vice versa. And it's like, why are people concerned with cheerleading for publishers and cheerleading for platforms to justify their purchase? Like, I don't know. I guess I'm not as concerned with. I mean, we know it's healthy. We're right on the pulse of PC gaming. We're more confident in it than ever, partly because the infrastructure is growing, the sales, and what we're talking about up there. But we're not concerned at all.
It is nice to have a game that's so polished and easy to point to, though. As like instead of pointing to Arma 2 as like the best game on PC, you're like, yeah, but it's kind of like shifty and sketchy at times, and like
buggy as hell.
Download a lot of mods in order to get it to work, but then you point to StarCraft 2. It's like, this is so polished, ready to go. Like the multiplayer is like freaking solid as it all get up. Mm-hmm. So that's about.
Thanks, right?
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
I found it very interesting. You mentioned StarCraft almost in the same breath as you talked about Xbox Live for the original Xbox going down, mm-hmm. because Blizzard took a big step in the StarCraft 2 multiplayer on Battle.net 2. in turning it into more like a console multiplayer experience, including with the fact that all games have to go through Battle.net 2. And if their servers, for some reason, aren't available, you're not playing StarCraft 2 online, and you're not doing tournaments, and you're not able to publish mods that other people can play. So they have a lot more control than PC gaming companies usually have. Do you think that's, you know, a good thing, a bad thing? Is that the future, or is that something to be afraid of?
Well, how many companies do you think, like, so the whole thing about console gamers are like, oh, they're going to charge for multiplayer. Well, the only two people that could do it is Halo and Call of Duty, because they're the only ones where people will be willing to pay to play multiplayer. I think that's the same with Blizzard. Blizzard's the only company that can do something like this, because the players are going to be willing to kind of take that step, because it's like, I didn't want to pay $60 for StarCraft, but they had me by the balls, man.
That was, that was a good explanation.
It's a great question. I think Blizzard, like, honestly, creatively, like, just from the way that we work with them on occasions on covers and stuff, like, they're very concerned with control, and they're very concerned with, like, owning their own products. And of course they love mod. They care about the modding community. It's a big reason why they're successful. You know, you can see, like, this is probably a good example. They love of how much they love their community. You go to Blizzard HQ in down near Irvine, California, and at their front desk they have these 3-ring binders filled with fan art that just people have mailed to them, in letters of, like, 7-year-olds that have mailed to them. They love their fans. So I think, in the, you know, it's totally reasonable to be concerned, like, well, everything flows through them. We're relying on them for our access to the game, and that's unusual. That feels a little bit uncomfortable, but...
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, how... I don't know.
No one else can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But, yeah. Isn't that bad? That's not something that I'm saying is a good thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's
something that they did because they can.
I'd say they trade some of that by giving you value by, you know, the stat tracking. It's kind of up to you whether or not that's valuable to you.
Yeah, the ladders are great for.
I love checking on my friends and how they're doing and watching their replays. So there's some value in that infrastructure, just like there is value in Steam. You know, you could say that Steam is DRM, quote unquote, if you'd like. But ultimately, I think it benefits the consumer in a reasonable sense. I haven't been inconvenienced by downtime on Blizzard. On Battle.net, so I'm perfectly happy with it. That's kind of my personal opinion.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
So I recently read an article. Well, I guess not too recently, but you guys re-reviewed Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
And
sure.
And you talked about level design, and I find it funny too, because I remember playing games where the level design is just horrible, and it was like the greatest game I'd ever played. And, you know, I spent 2 hours searching for this and something stupid. So now, do you think as players we've evolved, or just we've been forced to? What I'm trying to get at is, what do you think level design is going? Where do you think it's going now? Like, how are we going to evolve next? Because we have so many awesome games, you know, like, look at the way Baldur's Gate kind of came out, and then we evolved from that, and then we have like Mass Effect, and it's a polish, and so it's just continuing moving forward. And where do you think that's going?
You know, I don't know how many people checked out Epic Citadel for the iPhone or the iPad the other day. It was a tech demo that Epic had released, but when I played it, it's stunning. It's so beautiful what they did with the hardware. You're walking around the city, and it's so fucking gorgeous. But I got up to a ledge, and it was like a foot from the next level, and I couldn't jump. And I realized it's a tech demo. It's not, you're not meant to do anything, but still it reminded me, like, the first thing they approached was how it looked and not how it played. That wasn't a demo I was interested in. And I think you're right. We have evolved since that time when, you know, it was okay to spend 2 hours looking for something. But since then, as a culture, we have evolved. Our sensibilities have evolved. Our tastes have evolved. Our spatial sophistication has skyrocketed, and that's true for console gamers as well.
I think level design is, like, far less punishing now than it used to be. I mean, if you play, like, an old game, I mean, it's not to say it's bad. I'm just saying it's different, because you're right. But if you go back and play, like, the original Fallout 2, it's like, man, it's hardcore. I mean, the level design itself, you compare that, which is an open world game, technically, right? Compare that to, like, Grand Theft Auto or Oblivion, which is far more forgiving with fast travel, et cetera. It's like, yeah, I think it's just changing to meet whatever our tastes are now, and, you know, for better or worse. And it's also, it's different from game to game, right? I mean, for, like, StarCraft, I mean, that's, the level design for StarCraft 2 is very much like it was before. I mean, I didn't play the first one, but I've seen, I mean, it reminds me a lot of Command & Conquer. But then you get games like Mass Effect 2 where it's very much kind of like a game on rails, like you said, which is, I mean, I don't know. It's
well, yeah, I mean, there are instances like even the boss battles and stuff where you're like, well, wait, why are there shoulder-high walls everywhere?
Yeah, well, there's always barriers.
Something's
that you
coming
know
up
can
here.
Hide
I'm
going
to be
yeah.
fighting. I see that wall.
He's just like shoot up. Like,
that what? Does happen.
Yeah. Okay, let's take one more.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thanks.
I think we only got a couple of minutes. So like,
okay, I'll try to power through this.
What
then.
Was that?
I don't know.
Thanks.
Don't worry.
There's definitely, while the death of PC gaming has been greatly exaggerated, there's still some reasons why consoles do really well.
Oh, sure. Oh,
yeah. And it's really difficult. You talk about the Farmville and it being kind of a gateway to more hardcore PC gaming, yet some of the really hardcore PC experiences with modding and fixing patches and dealing with crashes turns a lot of people off. Do you think the industry will really strive to move away from having to have user-made fixes, user-made enhancements to their graphics, or is that really just part of the experience and they're okay with that?
As long as there are PCs and as long as people are creative, we'll always have that kind of mods. There'll always be companies wanting to serve us. Always.
Awesome.
That's my impression.
Yeah, I mean, what happens when, like, you know, it happens, studios go under, and sometimes, you know, you on the PC, there's extended support for these games even well after the original studio is gone with people making homemade patches. I mean, in Stalker's case, people are still there, but, you know, they've remade all these huge patches for Stalker to make it even better. I mean, I'm perfectly okay with that. You know, we're on a console. It's, I mean, you're kind of stuck to whatever the developer releases directly.
Yeah, I mean, multiple form factors is always going to lead to certain situations where you have crashes, you need drivers, the drivers don't work. I mean, there was a game, The Saboteur, for example, released, didn't support ATI cards when it released. Pretty big oversight there, guys. Like a third of the graphics.
So it's only 50% of the market share.
So, you know, there are those situations. It's something we deal with as part of PC gaming, but I accept them and embrace them. Kind of in the same way Han Solo kicks his Millennium Falcon sometimes when it doesn't work, in exchange for that level of control we have.
Thank you.
Yep. For everyone else, I think we have to wrap now, but if you're in line to ask a question, come up here. I'll give you my card, and I promise we'll answer them all by email.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we can safely and with some level of organization congregate outside here
and
talk to anybody that wants to talk to us. We'd love to – yes.
StarCraft tournament?
Oh, yeah, guys. It's not in the schedule, but there's a StarCraft 2 tournament in the PC free play area.
When?
Tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much.
You can come destroy me.
Get in
Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you.